to András Eissel to give us his own assessment of the Eurogroup meeting thus far. To you, András.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. I will give a short overview on actually what took place yesterday, and then in the end I will give some short reflections on this before giving the floor to Lukas, who I think will have some more concrete proposals to attend. So yesterday's Eurogroup meeting took place to find a compromise on a number of measures to deal with both the short-term and long-term economic consequences of the current COVID-19 crisis. Unfortunately, after some lengthy discussions, no final solution was found so far until the early morning hours, which means we will have Thursday, where there will be another struggle for compromise, and if not, it will probably go back to the heads of government to take over from their finance ministers. There were a number of measures and topics discussed yesterday, and so among them were the European Investment Bank's plan of a 200 billion euro fund to provide loans to companies in difficulties, the European Commission's plan for a temporary European unemployment reinsurance scheme called SURE, of up to 100 billion euros of loans to support especially national short-term working schemes. And I think there's some rather broad consensus on these two measures. And then there were some other issues that are still a bit less concrete or that are more strongly fought over. And so there has been a lot of exchange actually about the future role of the EU budget in dealing with some of the issues of the economic crisis, providing assistance to member states. And I think that's pretty important also because there's the ongoing negotiations for the next multiannual financial framework. And then two key issues were, of course, the question of providing loans through the European stability mechanisms of up to 2% of a country's GDP through a new type of credit line. And there the huge discussion is which kind of conditionality is this coming with little, no, or actually some considerable sort of conditionality. And there's also been a very strong vivid discussion about the creation of an instrument, maybe called Corona Bonds, Recovery Fund, or whatsoever, that would at least on a temporary basis provide some common debt issuance, and that which would be based on grants rather than loans given to member states, and in the end would contain some form of transfers between member states. And I mean, a bit as expected, there's been a major clash, especially between Italy and the Netherlands, which are in a sense representing the positions of a more northern and more southern block of countries. I mean, behind Netherlands, you have countries such as Austria and Finland, to a certain extent Germany, and behind Italy, you have countries such as Spain, Portugal, and to a certain extent France. And so the big issues yesterday discussed were the Netherlands demanded actually that there would be rather strong conditionality attached to ESM loans to support national economies. Only for health expenditures, they would have seen an exemption from any conditionality. And the Netherlands is also very strongly rejecting any calls for common debt. In their view, which would simply increase risk in Europe instead of reducing them, I think which is pretty questionable, but that's the position they have for the moment. And Italy, on the other hand, is very strongly against any or strong conditionality attached to ESM loans, and also strongly supports the introduction of some form of common debt, rather arguing that there's risk sharing needed in Europe. I mean, some of these concerns are also strongly driven by domestic concerns. In the Netherlands, there will be elections next year, which will be probably a contest between current Prime Minister Mark Rutte and Finance Minister, which is from another party, from the Christian Democrats, Wiebke Hoekstra. And in Italy, actually, the ESM is also a big issue because there's already been this dilemma that there is a lack of solidarity perceived of Eurozone member states from the last crisis. And the ESM itself is rather seen as a tool of overt intrusion to national domestic affairs, actually. And that risks, actually, even if there's a compromise found on the ESM, that Italy, as long as bond interest rates don't go up strongly, actually might even refuse to use this, as this is a strongly contested domestic issue. Just a side note, what I think is interesting also in terms of solidarity, I think the there has been some switch from the last crisis where transfers were seen as something not possible, and actually the Dutch themselves made a proposal for some kind of transfer actually, which would not be linked to any form of common debt issuance. And this has actually also been picked up by some German economists that saying, well, there's kind of a crisis solidarity, a short-term solidarity, maybe you can call it like this. So I think what is important for this, and so now moving to some of my initial remarks to this evolution is, I think it's interesting that even countries that have been so far a bit reluctant to provide fiscal transfers, and this is always a huge issue in the Eurozone level, they seem to be more willing than in the last crisis to display some solidarity. What I think is important, though, I think really important, that it doesn't only matter that there is or there will be solidarity, but also in which form and which extent this solidarity takes. And I think a big struggle will be about this. And there is now a lot of proposals on the table for some sort of common debt issuance. And while there is a lot of confusion, because a lot of people give the same name to instruments or tools that are actually very different, or on the other hand, call things that are actually very similar in the outcome very differently. And however you want to call these instruments, I think what will be important in the way forward is to actually have some common debt issuance, at least on a temporary basis, and which will actually serve to provide some transfers across Eurozone member states. And so this should become basically in the form of grants or subsidies rather than loans. And I think this is important because from my point of view, I work a lot on fiscal policy and fiscal rules, fiscal frameworks. It's because the exclusive use of loans will just strongly increase the indebtedness of individual Eurozone member states. Also of those, of course, that were already very burdened with high debt before the COVID-19 crisis. And I think that such a strong increase of deficits and debt will pose, however, major problems for certain member states as soon as there will be pressure again from the Commission and other member states to revoke the escape clause, which at least for now, for the time being, has suspended parts of the European fiscal framework, basically. And so already before the crisis has hit Europe, actually, there have been some major difficulties for some countries with the fiscal rules. I mean, Italy already had big problems to, for example, to comply with the debt requirements, basically, and even a small reduction in debt has been difficult due to low growth, mainly. If most of the additional debt that stem from the crisis will be nationally, this will be, I think, actually create extreme pressures on the European fiscal framework itself. And from this point of view, it might be actually in the interest even of the more northern Eurozone member states to jointly finance new public debt through common debt issuances if they actually want to go back, and I think that's their interest mainly, to the existing set of fiscal rules. I mean, there will be a trade-off in terms of how that the debt will be financed that is necessary to be made right now to deal with the consequences of the crisis, and which kind of framework should be placed on the European level. But I'll leave it there for the moment and give over to Lucas. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Andreas. And thanks a lot, Sebastian, for having me in this webinar. I would like to make three points, building up on what Andreas said so far. I think the first observation I would have is that things are moving finally, and I think that's a good thing. We had two Eurogroup meetings, which were fairly superficial with long statements where there were actually no decisions. We also had a European Council 2 weeks ago, which also failed to take any meaningful decisions and didn't even give a good mandate to member states and to the ministers in the Eurogroup. And so I think now the important issues are really on the table, and that's very helpful. And I think now we are discussing the important measures. The interesting thing about last night, I think it was also that we did apparently have fairly broad agreement on these three measures that Andreas mentioned, and that in a way, the Netherlands were a bit the odd one out, and that we didn't have really the traditional country groupings. I think it depended a bit on the different measures, but especially on the question whether the ESM could give out loans without conditionality The Dutch seem fairly isolated, and I found it quite remarkable that Olaf Scholz, the German finance minister, in his press statement this morning, was very clear that he used the formulation, "We are almost there, but we require unanimity," and that's as strong a public statement I've heard a German finance minister give against his Dutch colleague as I remember in like recent years. And what is also important, I think, is, and that also was very remarkable in Scholz's statement this morning, is the realization that we need to go beyond these three measures, so EIB, ESM, and the Commission's SURE proposal, and have something for the recovery phase. This is was a French proposal, this recovery fund. And this acceptance that this package of three measures is not enough, I think, is also very significant. Second point I want to make, and that is a bit more conceptual, I think we have to make sure that we always understand that we have two distinct problems that we need to tackle. One is, or like in general, when we talk about member states' capacity to fight the fallout of this crisis with fiscal measures. The first problem we have is financing conditions. Member states need access to credit at reasonable terms. And that is something the ECB with its PEP program has largely taken care of. And that the ESM program that is, or like the ESM credit line that is now proposed, and also, by the way, the Commission's SURE proposal, help to add a second and third line of defense for the financing conditions of member states and markets. That's a very important problem, but I would say now that has largely been solved. We have a different problem, which is that some member states enter this crisis with much higher debt levels than others, and also with, for some countries, a weaker growth potential. And for these countries, it's not only about financing conditions, but to ensure like a long-term sustainability of their debt, even with the new fiscal measures that all will have to take, we will need some form of burden sharing of the costs, which in plain English means they might not have to pay everything back that they are spending now. And for this kind of problem, we do not really have a solution yet. And I think it's very important also when we talk about different instruments, like corona bonds, like a fund, like using the ESM, that we are very clear which of the two problems we try to address. And that we basically need political agreement on two principles at the European level, on the principle that all member states need to have reasonable financing conditions, and on the principle that we need to share the burden of the fiscal cost of this crisis. And I don't think we are there yet for the second one. Third point I want to make linked to that is that I want to briefly discuss what Sebastian Grund, Christian Odendahl, and I have proposed on the weekend as a solution to the second problem, which is the burden sharing. What we've proposed is to set up what we call a pandemic solidarity instrument, so an EU instrument under Article 122 of the treaty, which would be really tailored to this crisis, which would be time-bound, so temporary, with a specific target, where the Commission would issue bonds in the market. We think about 440 billion euros, and would then with this money co-finance different measures in member state and prop up the EIB. The measures by the member states would be short-term work schemes, directly health-related spending, and then also co-financing of stimulus packages when they come due. You could call these corona bonds or not. I don't think that's very important. But the important thing is we believe that we need some form of common debt issuance, because the alternative would be to increase the EU budget massively and to do this kind of co-financing of member states' measures from the EU level to the EU budget. But I don't think in these economic conditions it is it can be reasonably expected that any of the member states will put substantially higher contributions on the table already this year. And that is why we propose this kind of common debt issuance, not as an end in itself, but as a means to finance a European contribution to national fiscal efforts that then has to be repaid much later, and that it doesn't have to be financed this year. So I think these three points are important. A, there's movement. B, we have two different problems and we don't have a solution to the second one, which is burden sharing yet, but at least there seems to be an opening now. And third, We need new instruments, we need new solutions, but these are possible within the EU framework. They can be deployed fairly quickly. And if you want to check it out, it's on our website at thelawcenter.eu. And I think I hand over to Eulalia now, no?
Sorry, I didn't have the micro open. Thank you, Sebastian, and thank you, Andreas and Lucas. I will try to complement what they have been saying. I will focus more on the EU budget. Actually, one of the things that we see in this Eurogroup is that there has been quite a lot of discussion on the EU budget. And that's something that is not, it's rare in the Eurogroups, actually. Normally, Eurogroups do not deal with the MFF. But now it's true that it has come up, this idea that the since we are starting to negotiate the new MFF, maybe that can be part of the centerpiece of a new Marshall Plan for the recovery. So I would like to make 2 points on that, maybe. Just before talking about that, saying that, of course, we have seen that the EU budget has already been mobilized in response to the crisis, but we know the limits of the EU budget. We know that there are not a lot of margins. So the Commission has proposed the coronavirus facility investment, to use the cohesion funds and this new emergency support instrument, but this is always very tiny, so we cannot do much with the current EU budget. And the question now is what we can do with the new MFF, whether we can use it. And we know that Ursula von der Leyen announced some days ago that they are going to review the proposal of MFF. And as I say, I wanted to do 2 main points, one on content and the other on timing. On content, I would say that it's very important not to have very high expectations on that. Of course, as Lucas has said, from a formal or from a logical perspective, the best solution would be to do it through the EU budget. But we know what is the dynamics of negotiation on the EU budget. And I don't think the crisis will change that much. There will be still the dominance of net balances in the negotiations. And if something, the crisis can aggravate this, the more time we take to adopt the new MFF, the more the crisis will be unfold, and the more the difficulties or the resistance of member states to lose in net balances, either net contributors or net beneficiaries. So that does not mean that I don't expect, and I don't think the Commission has the capacity to do a major change in terms of size or in terms of reallocation of the spending, because reallocating spending across headings means changing net balances among member states, so that means reopening the discussion again. But that does not mean that nothing can be done, and of course it's normal to try to adjust the new MFF to the situation. I see 2 or 3, 4 things that can be done, and I think and expect the Commission to put on the table. One, I expect they will exploit much more the possibility to build up instruments on the budget, leveraging additional funding, meaning through debt, meaning through guarantees. And this has already been done in the past. It has been experimented much more lately with EPSI, which was in itself an innovation, the Juncker Fund. And we can always have this possibility. We can always have an MFF with a margin without the on resource ceiling that allows us to create, if there is political consensus, to create something based on that. Of course, it will not be the bazooka we need. And as Lucas has said, this has to be based on national budgets, but it can help and it can be a complement. The other thing related with this, that it's important, is to increase the on resource ceiling. We know that the Commission proposed already an increase to the on resource ceiling in the previous MFF proposal, and it had been diminished by the Council. The on resource ceiling, to repeat, this is just the maximum capacity the Commission has to ask for revenues to fill the obligations, to reimburse the obligations linked to the EU budget. That does not mean that we are going to spend it all, but that gives margin for the Commission to create new instruments. Third thing, and that's very important, also flexibility. I think that's essential. If one thing we can learn from this crisis is that we can no longer work in a 7-year budget totally with totally frozen expenditures, and especially now that we have this uncertainty on the next year. So there are many ways of introducing flexibility, and the Council has always been very reluctant to put more flexibility to the budget. But I think there you have some margins to to see changes in position of the Council, much more than on size, much more than on major reallocation of spending. Some things it can be done is, at least at very minimum least, to reintroduce the midterm review. That was one proposal of the Commission, endorsed also by the Parliament, but the Council refused to do it. I think we really need this time a major and real midterm review. We cannot plan the next 7 years. We need to separate maybe the first, second year, which will be much more based on confronting the crisis, and the last years of the MFF, which will be much more getting out of the crisis and recovery and retaking the priorities of before climate, these kind of things. And then we can also introduce much more flexibility within the programs. And we have seen now, for instance, the Commission has just presented, has given a lot of flexibility in the use of EU funding, EU cohesion funding for this year. Why not maintaining this for the following year so that member states have much more capacity to use EU cohesion funding to fight this crisis? Another thing that is relatively easy to do is to front load spending without changing national envelopes, just putting much more spending first years and not the last years. So these kind of things, you can do it. And I think it's good that the Commission put this on the table. The other thing is on procedure or on timing. The problem we have now, as we all know, is that we don't have time. Time is running. We were already out of time to approve the next MFF. In February, March, Mr. Koeman, the Director General, was saying to us that, if we don't agree to an MFF at the end of the year, there is this question of we should put into place a contingency plan to allow the ceilings of the current MFF to be extended for 1 year. And that's a procedure that is a bit complex, because you need also to extend all the legal basis of all the programs so as to give the Commission the authorization to continue spending with these programs. So the Commission was saying some months ago that was very complicated, but was saying that nevertheless, if there was no agreement on MFF before the summer, they would put a proposal of contingency plan. Now, if we put this new MFF proposal on the table late in April, it's very difficult to imagine that there will be an MFF agreement in the Council before the summer. So I think the Commission should not, of course, they bet on this scenario that the Council, under crisis, they will reach an agreement and the Parliament will endorse an agreement. But I would say we should not be so optimistic, and especially we should be sure, we should guarantee that there will be an option in case of no deal, because the worst thing it could happen in terms of EU budget for Italy and Spain, for instance, is to have problems to spend in 2022 and to lose EU funding that they have, they receive annually. So let's do both things at the same time. Let's try to negotiate a new MFA, but do not forget and do not underestimate the complications if there is no deal, and prepare for the worst, because it's important to have this safety net in case there is no agreement on the MFA. So I leave it here, and then we can...
Yes. Thank you very much, Ladia. As you mentioned, time is running and it's almost 3 o'clock, so we'll move on with our question and answer session. I'd like to thank Andreas, Lucas, and yourself, Alalia, for both giving us your analysis of the Eurogroup as it stands now, and also hinting to some realistic solutions that are on the table and that we'll be happy to discuss. I leave now the floor to Mathieu Meunier, who has received, I think, some questions, and who will manage this part of the second part of this webinar. Thank you.
Okay, so you have the opportunity in the question and answer button situated in the bottom toolbar to ask your questions, and I will then forward them to our speakers. You also have the opportunity to vote for previously submitted questions, so that will contribute to singling out the questions you find the most important. As we have no questions for the moment, maybe Lucas or Andreas, would you like to react to what Eulalia said, or
maybe I can say one thing on Eulalia's part. I absolutely share the view that we should try to use the EU budget as much as possible to complement the efforts that are discussed now in the Eurogroup. But I think there's one danger in putting too much emphasis on the MFF, which is that, and I think we have seen that already, like in statements by the Commission President in the recent weeks, that there shouldn't be the impression that only with the MFF we can do the burden sharing that we need. Unless one thinks that, as I said, we get massively increased contributions by member states, which I don't believe. But I think there is a certain danger in suppressing political momentum by saying, look, the MFF will be our Marshall Plan for Europe, and this will be the solution to our problems, and therefore we don't need new instruments that go further. And we know that the Commission has been very skillful in recent years to produce very high numbers in the context of the EU budget and the MFF with very little actual money behind it, either through guarantees, and we can discuss whether guarantees are a good instrument in a situation where we will likely see losses on certain projects, but where basically you create this impression everything is fine until it isn't anymore. And so I think there's a strategic element to the MFF debate that shouldn't be underestimated.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think there were anyway that one thing that distinguishes what we see now in this crisis from the last Eurozone crisis is that we have put the EU budget in the picture, and that's not so bad. And I totally agree, it cannot be the centerpiece of one EU solution. But we should also remember what were the criticisms we did to the Eurozone mechanism that we built up during the Eurozone crisis that were very much, and we have seen the consequences of that were entirely intergovernmental, and it was very difficult to mobilize them and to activate them because they were always submitted to unanimity. So I think there's some scope to do combinations between the EU budget and, for instance, putting guarantees of member states, but always within the EU framework, and always with the Commission on the wheel, on you know, controlling this, because having it into the EU budget has some benefits. First, it maintains the unity, and then it also ensures that it is under also the Parliament participates a bit. So I think, of course, it will not be the budget that will provide all the funding, but if we can try to combine with introduction, for instance, a mechanism which we merge guarantees from member states with EU budget resources, that's a way of putting something unified and simply, you know, single instrument, and not having separate things, very tiny EU budget instruments, as it was the case with the European financial stability mechanism and the European financial stability facility. I think it's better if we can try to do something, a sort of single instrument. Now, I don't know if technically it can be done, but I think they can try to do something like this. And it would be good to try to, at least to avoid having something totally parallel and outside the framework, because we know that once we create this, and it's what it has happened with the ESM, it will never get into it. And we know it, even if they commit to do it in 5-7 years, it will never get it. That gets permanent outside of the EU framework. And that's, I think, but of course, having said so, I want to see that now the urgency is having an agreement to having something. So if the only way of having an agreement is having it through something intergovernmental out of the EU budget, that's better than nothing. But for me, it's if we can merge both things, that would be better.
So we have a first question. So from an anonymous spectator, what is the role of the European Central Bank quantitative easing if common burden sharing is agreed upon? I think maybe Lukas, you would like to answer this question.
Yeah, I can take this one, and I can also take the next one on the possibility. Like, there is a question on whether there should be bonds. Like, a member state should issue very long-term bonds of 100 years or perpetual to be bought by the ECB and the QE. So the first thing, I think burden sharing would help a lot, because it would basically give political backing to the ECB to buy a lot more of this debt. We know on the current rules that the ECB can buy supranational debt, so ESM, EIB, commission debt, up to 50% of issuance and issuer, which is different from the limit that we have under QE, at least for national debt. And the reason for this is, of course, because buying a supranational debt does not run into the same concerns regarding monetary financing and also potential restructuring than the national member state debt. So I think it would, like, having some kind of burden sharing with some form of common issuance would help the ECB doing its job on the monetary policy side. The other question on, like, the member states issuing long-term bonds that would be like 100-year or perpetual, and the last part of the question already answers it in a way, that would be monetary financing. And to put my German hat on for a moment, there is Article 123 of the treaty, which prohibits monetary financing. It has like very stretchable limits, as the ECJ has already said when it issued its judgment on QE, but there are limits. And taking a 100-year or perpetual bond on the books of individual member states would pretty likely not fall or not be okay under the treaty.
Our next question is possibly a more general one for the European Union. So, do you think the handling of this crisis is a form of turning point for the European Union? If the crisis isn't handled on the European level, I fear there will be an increase in the already existing skepticism towards the EU.
Yeah, I think I can take this one. I mean, as often has been said, I mean, things are made or are broken during crisis. And so, of course, this is a major turning point for the European Union. I think what's interesting is, I mean, in a certain sense, this is an unprecedented crisis. So, I mean, even to compare it with 2009 and what happened shortly afterwards is probably we see a deeper crisis now going on. What is good, I think, is that there are some tools in place now to overcome this crisis, which were very painfully developed and had to be fought through during the last crisis. I mean, just that the ECB basically made this very early decision, or basically showed resolve in being basically refinancing states if necessary, and doing this was way quicker than in the previous crisis, and so this helped. But I think as the crisis is a very deep one, I think this will challenge very much this whole notion of solidarity, especially as this crisis, I think you can really argue, is not the fault of any individual countries, and so the lucky ones that are hit less are really in for helping the other ones. And I mean, if the European Union is really, as some people say, not just than an economic project, but is also a political and a social project, solidarity is needed. But what I already said before, I think it's very important that there is solidarity also felt, is that this need to take a certain form also, and that this is able to actually create in the long run actually stronger potential economic growth. I mean, we have seen some countries that had some very low growth rates before this crisis. And I mean, whatever will come now in the recovery plan set out on the European level will determine if the European Union and its member states will be further fragmented afterwards, or if there is actually a joint resolve and a joint push towards a stimulus that would actually also help those countries that went into the crisis in a weaker position. If some of real solidarity or of a strong reaction is not happening, then I fear also that this will strongly push forward Eurosceptic forces, nationalistic forces, and so forth. And I think it's very important that there is a decisive reaction on the European level, and that member states, especially those that are in a better position, are understanding what the long-term consequences will be if there will be no decisive actions, and that it's good to take decisive actions the sooner the better. And especially on issues such as common debt issuance, the sooner you do this, the more you will also help national member states to not run into overly high individual public debt, basically. And I think in the long run, that's something which will be helpful for the Eurozone and Europe as a whole.
And so that brings us to another question we got on the question of growth. What will the long-term impacts of the inevitable increased sovereign debt issuance that we will see be on the growth in the EU? Surely countries like France and Italy adding to their debt now will mean austerity in the coming years, which will depress growth in the EU as a whole. Therefore, it must be in the interest of countries like the Netherlands or Austria that their major trading partners emerge from this crisis in a position to buy their goods and services. Is there any reaction to this statement?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much in line to what I said before. So, I mean, especially for those countries that already had difficulties in increasing their potential growth, basically, if we're not doing anything about this, then there will be a further fragmentation in the years to come. And those countries that were doing already better before will most likely do better. And those that already were struggling will most likely struggle even more. And what's always important when you think about public debt is it also depends on, I mean, the size of your public debt to GDP, as it's typically nevertheless counted, depends also on the growth of your economy. And there is always a potential to grow out of debt. And I think there needs to be a lot of effort put into this direction, especially towards forward-looking investment, basically, to allow all countries, I think, but especially those that suffered from low growth rates before, to be able to increase that. And that will help them, even if we have now strongly increased public debt, to overcome these problems without going into overt austerity. And what I think is important, what we should have learned from the last crisis is that while in 2009, there has been some substantial stimulus into the economy, then actually very rapidly there was fiscal consolidation taking place. And that was also due to pressure from the markets, of course, which then until 2012 were not really resolved. But consolidation took probably place too rapidly, basically, which undermined the post-crisis growth, basically. And I think what this will be very important for any recovery plan now is not just a stop short of dealing with the short-term consequences of the crisis, which are extremely strong and sharp, but also think about this will have a strong impact on future growth, basically. And we need a sufficient stimulus and for a sufficiently long time to get over it, basically. Yeah. And I think that's very much in the interest of countries like Germany or the Netherlands and Austria. I mean, we're economically interdependent, and you can only for so long profit inside a common currency. So
so the next question is very much about the ongoing negotiations. So one viewer is asking, could you clarify the position of Germany on Eurobonds or other burden sharing solutions compared to the position of the Netherlands?
Maybe I can take that one. So I don't think there's a set position on the question of common issuance. So so far the government hasn't said anything that it would support any form of common issuance. There's the head of the SPD, Norbert Walter Borjans, being on record for the need for some form of common issuance. The CDU, the bigger coalition partner, so far has ruled that out. But I think also one of the problems we have in the German debate is that we are very much in a Eurobond versus no Eurobond discussion. And that, of course, is not the alternatives we are really talking about. So I think it would also take a bit of time to really get into a more nuanced debate about the necessary instruments. I think one thing that is clear in the German debate is that plain vanilla Eurobonds, where we issue bonds on behalf of member states so that they can take the money into their budgets, will not happen. That is I think there's also a pretty clear legal constraint in both the German constitution and also the EU treaties. And so I think the position on Eurobonds on the German side is the same as the Dutch one. On burden sharing, as said, Scholz this morning basically endorsed the French idea of a recovery fund and on the need to do something more beyond these three measures that were discussed. So I would be there cautiously optimistic that at least things will be moving. And also remember, 5 weeks ago, the Germans had the Schwarze Null, and that fell within like a few days. So I wouldn't like too much internalize German red lines at this point, as they might be more moving than we think.
Just a side note for one of the other northern countries. So, I mean, Austria is also officially very strongly opposed to what was the Corona bond proposal. So especially Chancellor Sebastian Kurz, but also the finance minister, Gernot Blümel. But their coalition partner, the Green Party, signaled, and the vice chancellor and head of the Green Party, who is actually an economist, he at least kind of floated the possibility that Corona bonds could be something that would be possible under a number of conditions, of course. So concerning Austria, for example, which is part of this Northern Bloc, there's also maybe a bit of a change in the air. I mean, of course, they are the official position is still to be strongly opposed, but I think it's considerably less so than in the Netherlands, where, as I laid out before, there's also this domestic contest for the next elections to be, the who has the strongest position, basically, on this issue.
Okay, thank you. The next question is about the EU budget, so it will be a question for Eulalia. What do you think of the proposal of published on Italian newspaper by economist Gros to allow MS to be relieved from paying into the EU budget? For a member state like Italy, it means saving up to 100 billion euros.
I know the proposal. Actually, what Daniel Gross proposed is to relieve Italy and Spain from payment of net national contributions to the EU budget in the following 7 years. And indeed, there is a big that would be a big amount of money to be spared. The problem, I see two or three problems with this proposal. One is that that assumes that the crisis will only touch these two big countries. And now we are in the middle of uncertainty. We don't know whether it will be stopped or not. Otherwise, if it spreads to other countries, that's very difficult. Someone has to pay for the budget. The part that Italy and Spain do not put on the budget has to be compensated by extra national contributions from the other EU budget. And the advantage of using debt instruments, the advantage of using Corona bonds or whatever we want to talk, to use the name, whatever we want to call them, is that we are using two things. We are resharing between member states, but also between years in some sense, intertemporally. So we are putting ahead in the time the payment of the cost that we have now. Now, saying that in the next 7 years, some member states will have to pay more to the EU budget, even if they are not suffering as Italy and Spain, they are suffering also, it's very difficult. So economically, it seems to me that doesn't make sense because we don't know the spread of the crisis. And politically, it will be also very difficult because we need to change the own resource decision for that. And the own resource decision has to be approved by unanimity and ratified by all national parliaments. So I think it's not a solution actually, because it's difficult and it's economically a bit questionable that it would work actually.
Our auditor Pierre Jaillet is asking, could you come back on the kind of conditionality that might be attached to ESM financing, and what could be the room of maneuver in further discussions? So that question, could you come back to the kind of
So basically, I mean, there's the ECCL, the Enhanced Condition Credit Line, or like some new ESM credit line that would be set up. And I think the idea is here to say, basically do whatever you need to do to combat the pandemic. And that is enough in terms of conditions. And that I would say that's possible under the current ESM treaty. But ultimately, that's a political problem at the moment. I think it's fairly binary. Like the Dutch say, you can now, as Andreas already said, you can now get the money without conditions now, but you will have to abide by some conditions after the pandemic has ceased. And that's just completely politically unrealistic in Italy. So my assumption would be that at some point, like the Dutch will have to make a judgment call whether or not to to fall in line in a way. Maybe there are concessions on other points, but I think on that point it's fairly binary. And an important consideration there is also this is pretty symbolic, because the likelihood that somebody goes to the ESM, even Italy, in that situation is very, very low. Plus, if we have this sure proposal by the Commission, which is basically the same as the ESM, just with less conditions attached to it, if you get loans that you have to pay back, is more attractive than the ESM. So the likelihood that this ESM credit line will ever be used is low, and when it should be used, then it will be too small. So then we talk about different conditions in any case. So this is like a largely political symbolic fight, because some countries like Germany and the Netherlands were very adamant that the ESM is the right tool to be used. So there needs to be an ESM tool in the box. And the Italians were very adamant that it doesn't have to, it can't come with any conditionality. But the practical implication of that decision, I would say, is pretty low. It's a political and symbolic question.
So the following question is also on the European Central Bank. So in substance, the European Central Bank is already doing monetary financing, like all the central banks, even though nobody wants to say it. Without monetary financing of the current measures, austerity in the future will depress Europe. So the point is, why not simply keeping on with purchases, which are compliant with Article 123, with longer term maturities, which would be as legitimate as current purchases?
Yeah, again, like the monetary financing prohibition is not just a binary thing where it says you cannot do monetary financing if certain forms that would be characterized as monetary financing are allowed, others are automatically allowed as well. There is a clear, now with two cases, a clear case law at the European Court of Justice, which says what kind of bond purchases of member states government bonds are permitted and which ones are not. And I'm not a lawyer, but doing something with a perpetual bond that stays on the ECB balance sheet forever, under these judgments, are very likely not to be legal, whereas QE, that is happening at the moment, is clearly legal under ECJ case law. And so I think it's important to keep that in mind. Like, the ECB is not like a UFO that does whatever it wants, but it is governed by EU law, and that law puts limits on what the ECB can do.
So I see there's no further questions, but maybe as a form of a pre-conclusion, I could ask you what do you expect will happen tomorrow afternoon in the further meeting of the Eurogroup? Maybe as a quick conclusion.
As I started, I mean, I can start again. So, I mean, that's always very uncertain, because some of the decisions depend then on some kind of deals that are on other issues. I mean, as I said in the beginning, I think the Netherlands was taking this very strong position of there has to be some rather strong conditionality in the ESM was kind of a leverage to basically then say, okay, we will cave in on this, but we will not cave in on any form of common debt issuance and so forth. So I think that the likelihood that there will be actually some solution for the ESM, basically, where maybe the Netherlands will step back is not that low. I mean, especially as for quite some time this was proposed as the main tool, as solution, while before it was either we will have the ESM or something completely different, and now it's already like this we'll have, and then we'll have something complementary. I think it will be, it's hard to see now what the exact compromise will be. I think there could be some compromise on some tool that will actually kind of function like common debt issuance, but will be very technical, very complicated, so that it might be sellable somehow to the public audiences in specific member states. Well, I would find it good that there would be some way forward there. I think there's nevertheless a risk at least for now, this will be rather in some very in a language that is not very binding until maybe later. And I mean, as this crisis will unfold, I think it's pretty certain that there will be some stronger forms of solidarity needed, because the ESM, I mean, in terms of what you consider conciliatarity, is a rather weak tool in the end. And as Lucas also said, I mean, this is mainly for liquidity support. And as long as the ECB is actually can help actually to keep down interest rates, there's actually not that much, I think, rather little interest even for countries like Italy to use this. And also because this is a very red flag and domestically. So I think that's a bit what I would see is the direction going. And I mean, if there's still no solution found, I think there will be some solution found over the next days, maybe on the level of the heads of government, basically, maybe not on the finance minister level. Yeah.
Maybe I continue, and then Olalia, you can have the last word. If that's okay. I would build on what Andres just said. I think I would say it's relatively likely, but who knows, that we get some like agreement on the ESM tomorrow. My assumption would be that at least at the leaders level, we get some package that has some of these elements. If not, then we are in real trouble, because if we can't agree even on that, then I think we have a problem on agreeing on the important principles. Nevertheless, I think the next European Council will be important, because I don't see the Eurogroup doing anything beyond the three measures, but just an opening on this recovery fund idea and an openness, or like a signal to the leaders, give us more guidance on where we should work on. And I think we are at a point where this ping pong between the Eurogroup and the European Council should stop. And the European Council needs to make up its mind, like, how much political capital are the leaders ready to invest into the economic response to this crisis. And that means tasking finance ministers clearly with working on something that goes beyond liquidity provision and into burden sharing. Because that's so political that finance ministers will not be able to work without on their own without clear political guidance. So I think tomorrow is important in a way to provide the necessary condition for further progress, but it's by no means a sufficient condition. The sufficient condition has to come next week with the European Council and with a clear political commitment by leaders to go further than what we already have in the toolbox.
Yeah, maybe I can add to this. I could say where I don't want to see, actually. I totally agree with Andreas and Lucas, and my fear is that seeing, of course, we more or less hint that there will be these three measures with green light, more or less. But then the big question is what will happen with this fourth one, no? The recovery fund, or whatever we want to call it. And what I don't want to see is to see this directly linked to MFF negotiations, because for me it would be a way of kicking the can down and not doing anything, and delaying a lot the decision to be taken, a bit to take the burden out of the Eurogroup and saying, well, that's the Commission who has to make a proposal and then we'll see. And no, I mean, as Lucas has said, the EU budget, and I repeat the point I did before, I think the EU budget would be good to be part of the solution, but it's not the main part, it's not the centerpiece. So what we need, first of all, is a political will of sharing, risk-sharing, burden sharing among member states. And then if we can put into the EU budget and plus giving the authority of the Commission to control or to manage this instrument, that's perfect. But do not link too much this to the MFF negotiation, because this is really a way of saying we are not going to do anything until May. And we don't have, we don't have all this time, or even after the summer. And we know that MFF negotiations take a lot of time. So for me, to simplify it, I think I would like to see the opening to European Council decision on that. And then the EU budget, of course, giving margins to the EU budget to give the space to complement this recovery fund, but not expecting from the Commission to do the design of this new solution based entirely on the MFF, because we will not have this. That's the thing I would not like to see in the conclusions of the Eurogroup.
Thank you very much, Andreas, Lucas, and Eulalia for helping us understanding better what to expect from the ongoing Eurogroup, or the Eurogroup that will continue tomorrow, and also from the upcoming European Council. We see that there are some economic solutions there, but as always, we need also to find the right political means to sell them to each country's constituency, and that's also part of the negotiation. I won't draw any further conclusions from our side, but just to wrap up, I'd like also to thank you, all our 80 participants who took part and for addressing us their questions. We will continue this webinar, as I said, next week. This time we will address more precisely the issue of the unemployment scheme that the Commission has put on the table and the way to address it. I would like to specify that this webinar will be this time in French, but you are all very welcome, certainly. And we will also have a press conference with our President Enrico Letta before the European Council, as soon as the date is scheduled, also to share our thoughts and take your questions on this. So we look forward to welcoming you once again on this webinar, which is the best way to keep ties while we're all having to stay at home. And from there, I will leave you, as since it's 3:30 sharp, we started at 2:30 sharp, so I think we, unlike the Eurogroup that lasts 16 hours, we managed to do many things in just 1 hour. Thank you very much again, and see you next week.